This is HPC Wire Soundbite, your weekly source of commentary and insight on the HPC stories shaping the industry, with Michael Feldman, editor of HPC Wire, and Addison Snell, general manager of Tabor Research. And now, here are your hosts, Michael Feldman and Addison Snell.
Guten Tag, everybody, and welcome to a special edition of HPC Wire Soundbite on location at the International Supercomputing Conference in Hamburg, Germany. I'm Addison Snell, General Manager of Tabor Research, and here with me in person is Michael Feldman, editor of HPC Wire. Willkommen in Hamburg, Michael.
Hey, good afternoon, Addison.
Michael, we're lucky to be together. We're normally on opposite sides of California, but we got California weather here in Hamburg. The ISC conference officially opened this morning with a welcome session that included a keynote from Andy Bechtolsheim, and we'll discuss that shortly. But first, the new top 500 list was released at the press conference this morning. What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, the 33rd list was announced this morning. There's some surprises there, but not a whole lot new at the very top of the list. Still got Roadrunner at Los Alamos on top, the number one system. And I guess the surprise there is that Jaguar didn't put their two cluster pieces together and make it, or two pieces together and make it number one. They would have overtaken Roadrunner, but the explanation was that they didn't have time to run Limpac on the whole system, so they just decided to submit from the previous time. So the number one system still Roadrunner, the number two system still Jaguar, and then we've got a smattering of new systems in the top 10. There were four brand new systems, and the most prominent of those were two German systems. Number three was the Eugene system at Jülich Supercomputing Center, and then Europa at number 10, the Hybrid Sun and Bull system.
Michael, you're right. A lot of people were surprised about that Cray system not catapulting up to the top. What do you think of that story about not having time to run Linpack? Do you think that's really the reason, or are there other forces at play here?
Well, you know, it's hard to say because Oak Ridge probably doesn't care a whole lot about this, and they do have to devote days to it. I mean, it takes forever to run Linpack on a system that size, so they have to spend a lot of effort and time. So maybe they just didn't want to do it, and maybe Cray didn't push them to do it. I just talked to Peter Angara this morning, and he didn't seem that upset about it. So maybe everybody's happy, or maybe not, and they're just not telling. But, yeah, Limpac is getting to be a very onerous task with these large petaflop systems, and I'm wondering if this is going to be a trend that people with these systems that buy these things and want to do real stuff, they just don't want to do it anymore. I don't know. But do you think there's something going on sinister behind the scenes, Addison?
I haven't talked to anyone at Oak Ridge about it, so I don't know that I could say there's anything sinister about it, but I do find it a little tough to believe that they just couldn't find the time to run Linpack. So I wonder if there was some other high priority job that was really pushing it out, or if there's some reason that they're not big believers in the top 500 list. But it does raise sort of the meta question as to whether while paying too much attention to this list, does it still mean anything? I mean, we're here in Hamburg, and everybody, including me, certainly gets excited about it. We go to the press conference, and the first thing we do is start digesting the list and ripping it apart 8 ways to Sunday to see what the new story is. But, do you think you and I are the media. Do you think we're putting too much attention on it, too much emphasis on it?
Well, I think we probably are overemphasizing it. I mean, us included, but it's funny because the HPC community knows to a man that the top 500 list is basically a beauty contest as far as individual rankings. Now, trends are something else, but the rankings, everybody in this conference, everybody in the community basically knows that it doesn't mean much, but it means a lot to everybody outside the community, so it becomes important. From a standpoint of like IBM, they love this because they can see, it gives them a lot of prestige. Now, Cray is a different story because Cray is really only in HPC. So the people that are into them, they already know that it doesn't matter if they're one or two or whatever, because they're not going to get any extra publicity. They're not selling into the more general market. So for Cray, it probably works, and they probably don't care as much. If IBM lost a top spot because somebody forgot to take a Linpack, yeah, maybe they would be upset.
Yeah, I think as far as public perception goes, you know, it certainly can have a benefit in order to have a couple of systems up near the top. You know, the Microsoft system in China that's at number 15 is a great example of this because it gives them credibility, in this case, that Windows can scale to that level. But beyond getting those one or two success stories, after that, there's not a whole lot of remaining benefit to your fifth system, your 10th system, your 15th, until you get up to the level of IBM versus HP duking it out to see who can dominate the bulk of the list. Or it doesn't even need to be the system vendors. You could be talking about you know, InfiniBand versus 10 gigabit Ethernet, or Intel versus AMD, or one storage component versus another storage component. Until you're getting up to that level of overall share, there's not a lot of big benefit difference to just having the one Lighthouse account or the two Lighthouse accounts versus starting to have a handful. So it was interesting to look at that. And that IBM versus HP story continues to be interesting, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, those two companies are basically the two big leaders in HPC, obviously. Now, IBM has like 40% of the aggregated performance, but HP actually has more systems, and I think it's been that way for at least a few lists now that HP has dominated the actual number of systems on the list, edging out IBM by a little bit. Actually, though, HP doesn't have much at the top list. I think their top system is number 18, whereas IBM's already racked up about, you know, 10 or 20 systems by then, or not 10 or 20, I think 10 systems by then.
Yeah, that was pointed out in the press conference this morning that although HP had more systems on the list, IBM had more overall performance as measured by total impact or total flop. So really you have those IBM systems in the upper echelon, but HP really resulted in a very high turnover on the list by placing a lot of systems through the middle and bottom of the list, dominating that section of it with a high volume of systems for very high turnover.
Right. Well, actually, I think they rated the turnover rate just above average because they actually had extremely high turnover a year ago. So this was like the bottom, I think everything from position 274 on was replaced. And the bottom of the new list is 17 teraflops. So, yeah, about half the list got replaced. So decent turnover there. I think we'll expect that from now on. I mean, if there was going to be little turnover, it would have been now during this sort of, you know, slowdown in the whole market. But at least for the top 500 systems, it doesn't look like it did all that much. The whole aggregate performance grew from like 17 to 22 petaflops. So everything looks on track. We saw the tracking numbers on the presentation this morning, and you know, we're headed towards exaflops by 2020. It looks like everything's on track.
Well, you're right that you know, one of the big stories was that a lot of things are staying the same on the list this time around. There were a couple of noteworthy things in my mind. The first is to come back to your earlier point about the systems at Jülich, the number 3 and I believe it was the number 10 system with Eugene and Europa. I think are both very interesting, not only just in their combined performance, but having two systems in the top 10 in Germany while we're here in Hamburg is a big deal. And the fact that one of them is an IBM BlueJean cluster and the other is a collaboration with Sun and Bull, you know, both of whom have interesting stories around them. Bull is really trying to increase its presence in what they're calling extreme computing in Europe. And Sun, of course, has its own bag of issues around the Oracle acquisition right now. So to be hitting with a system in the top 10 of the top 500 list right at this critical moment for them is certainly an interesting story.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically two systems they connected together. It's a Bull-Sun hybrid cluster, I guess you could call it, and they've got a whole bunch of vendors glommed on. It was Mellanox and Partech. Bull's the integrator. So, yeah, that's an interesting system. In fact, there's going to be a talk on it on Thursday morning to explain sort of how that came about and what it's all about. But, yeah, that number 10 system is maybe the most interesting system on the list right now.
Yeah, and the other big transition that we've been seeing in top 500 is tracking with a market transition you and I have been discussing over the last couple of weeks, which is the massive adoption of InfiniBand. And really, 10 gigabit Ethernet is coming off looking as looking like one of the losers in these early stages of the show, not only to have the market share being whittled away by InfiniBand within HPC, but Eric Strohmeyer in his open session talk broke down the list by not only by architecture to show the growth in InfiniBand, but also went on to put up a couple of charts to show that the systems that that were running gigabit Ethernet had substantially lower LINPACK efficiency compared to the systems with InfiniBand or other interconnects, and also put up another chart showing that 10 gigabit Ethernet systems had the worst power efficiency out of all the other systems. So that was really a blow in my mind to the Ethernet vendors before the show even really gets going.
Although keep in mind that the Gig E guys, they still have the majority of the system. I think they still have twice as many systems as InfiniBand. They're just not as efficient, obviously. They trip more CPU to do what they need to do, but there's still a lot of them out there. They tend to be at the bottom. Now, the top of the list is different. It's all InfiniBand and proprietary interconnect. But at the heart of the list, at the bottom of the list, there is a lot of Gig E. It's just not as performant as the InfiniBand and proprietary stuff.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I agree. There's still a lot of Ethernet in the world, but I think the Gig E guys would have a hard time claiming any kind of a victory just based on there's a lot of Ethernet still in the world, but InfiniBand hasn't eaten their whole lunch yet. You know, that's kind of a difficult argument to press in my mind.
Yeah. In fact, I think what we would see, or maybe you would see, different proportions out there below the top 500. I think maybe InfiniBand would actually have maybe more of a market share in some of these systems. The top 500 is a little different. You get these sort of huge clusters that you don't need low latency or fast interconnects. They're just big clusters that do these sort of loosely coupled workloads. Whereas, you know, the HPC systems, even the smaller ones, you might tend to want more tightly coupled systems. You might have actually a higher proportion of InfiniBand in some of those sub 500s.
Yep. Well, and then Eric Strohmeyer spoke right before Andy Bechtolsheim during the open session, and Andy's whole talk was echoing what you were just saying about this path to an exaflop, going from a petaflop. We're a year into the petaflop era, and if you just keep extrapolating the line, you know, can we get to an exaflop in the next 11 years by 2020? Andy was talking about the technologies that would be needed in order to get there. What do you think about his talk?
Well, yeah, he was very optimistic. I mean, a lot of people, you know, are very much of doom and gloom about getting to exaflop because there are so many challenges. We have to reinvent, you know, just about every piece of it to get there. And yet, Andy presented a sort of a roadmap on how to do that. Now, without going into too much, I mean, it involved, you know, the cores, the interconnects, the memory bandwidth. I mean, the memory bandwidth was one of the big things. But he charted it out, and he felt by 2020 we could have an exaflop system. He didn't see any particular reason why we couldn't. And, you know, we'd do things like multi-chip modules to get the bandwidth up and to get the I/O and memory bandwidth up. Just use Moore's law to get, you know, more cores on a chip, aggregate more sockets, more modules together, and you know, he figured it out. He said, "Well, we'll get an exaflop system by 2020. It'll be about, he estimated, about 50 megawatts, but you know, that's still doable for a few choice spots. So it's possible. But I thought he was optimistic, and you know, there'd probably be people out there that would say, yeah, I think that's a rosy forecast. I don't know."
Well, you're right. Andy was painting an optimistic picture for the future. I thought it was a very interesting talk, and especially from a technology perspective, he was looking at, here are the technologies that we're going to need, and here's why, if you extrapolate what's been possible, that it's a reasonable thing we might be able to do something in 10 years. You know, it wasn't that long ago that we crossed a teraflop, and people were immediately talking about, could we make it to a petaflop within 10 to 12 years, and most if people said, no, not possible, you couldn't get there. That was before we got into multi-core and some other technologies. In fact, it was really very early in the cluster revolution. Now, I don't think everyone really predicted back then how clusters would go on to dominate the market. I didn't agree with Andy's entire talk. I liked his conclusions. I disagreed with some of his premise about that HPC would be the vertical industry that would drive the entire technology market because it was going to dominate from a revenue and units perspective. I just didn't think that was a realistic look at the market. But that doesn't mean I don't think that that we could get there. If Tabor Research does not believe that half of all units are going to be of all server units are going to be going into HPC, that's just not a defensible number to us. But on the other hand, I think there are interesting technologies that are not driven by HPC, such as GPU, which he didn't even include in his discussion, that have the potential to deliver a substantial amount of performance for certain applications. So I do believe, looking at what was up there, that you could have a new paradigm that delivers new levels of performance that could absolutely deliver a realistic exaflop on Linpack by 2020. That's a long time out. I just disagreed with the premise that it's going to be because HPC is driving the world by then.
Right, that was his initial premise. He thought by 2013 it would be more than half the market, and thus all HPC goodness would come out. All this technology would be in demand, so that all these things would get built: the multi-chip module for enterprise-type systems, the number of cores would go up, the memory bandwidth, all this stuff would be built with the idea that the market for HPC is so big that there's plenty of demand to fund this. Now, it's interesting, just last week, iSupply came out, another analyst firm, said by 2014, Moore's Law is going to be dead because none of the chip makers, none of the fab manufacturers are going to be able to build fabs anymore that will get them past 22 nanometers. So that was another wrench in it, that the process node technology is becoming so much more expensive as we go down that there's no economic model to build these chips. And part of Andy's premise was, well, we're going down to like 8 nanometers by 2020, and we're going to have 10 teraflop chips on a single socket. So there's definitely things that go wrong. Now, 2014 seems pretty pessimistic to me, but I know the economic model of chip manufacturing is definitely a problem, and it's not going to become less of a problem unless something changes. So there's definite questions about some of this, but it seems like always, like you said, when there was one teraflop system and people were saying it was impossible to get to a petaflop by the next 10 or 11 years, it happened. So maybe we'll find a way.
It did happen, and it wasn't only in Andy's talk that came up this morning. The question was also put to Thomas Sterling of LSU at the conclusion of the press conference this morning as to whether the technologies currently existed in order to get to an exaflop, and Thomas said emphatically that they did not, that we had none of the technologies currently that would be necessary to get there. And he cited three things in particular that were going to be necessary in order to invest in. One was power consumption, that we had to be able to lower the power envelope in order to reach that level of scale. The second was reliability. When you have so many individual components, your reliability on each individual one is going to have to be much better. And the third, I thought, was an interesting technical point. He talked about needing global system support within the core across the system, in particular for the ability to hide latency. Again, when you have so many components dispersed over such a wide distance across a fabric, that would be a necessary technology that doesn't currently exist in order to get there. But as we said, a decade's a long time in this industry, and it could be that we'll be doing another podcast in 2020. We'll have an exaflop system, and we're going to be talking about how to get to a zettaflop.
Right, and we'll say it's impossible because here's all the things that we don't have.
That's right. So. That's what we can look forward to doing in 10 or 12 years. Michael, the show's about to open on the show floor with its big gala opening, and then we're going to have two full days before we're back onto another podcast at the end of the show. Are there anything in particular you're looking for?
No, I just came to kind of see what people are thinking. I'm going to try and talk to as many of the exhibitors, see what they're showing. There's some interesting displays going on. I know I've talked to a handful of vendors before I got here, so I want to make sure I catch some of those. So, yeah, I just want to see what's going on here. And there's plenty going on. There's like 116 exhibitors, and, you know, it's nonstop fun.
Yeah. There's a couple areas I'm tracking. I definitely want to get to the bottom of this interconnect war and see who's coming down on which side. And I'm also particularly still interested in data management strategies and tracking the pending file system war. See who's getting on board with PNFS, who's lining up behind GPFS or Lustre, and what, if anything, we could expect from something like Hadoop, which is really gaining steam very quickly in edge HPC areas, and if it catches on fire enough, could start taking attention away from other types of scalable file systems. So I think the data management story is going to be interesting over the next couple of days.
Yeah, definitely the kernel file system, that's going to be an evolving thing. It'll be interesting to see if there's convergence or divergence in that area. But yeah, PNFS could be the thing that does converge everybody, and I think a lot of people are hoping for that.
All right, Michael. Well, I'll tell you what. Let's dive in. I'll see you here and there as we pass across the conference floor, and we'll sync up again on Thursday afternoon, and we'll talk about what we learned at the show.
Hey, sounds super, Addison.
All right. Thanks, Michael. Have a great conference.
You've been listening to HPC Wire Soundbite with Michael Feldman and Addison Snell. Download this podcast every Friday afternoon at www.hpcwire.com. HPC Wire, the leading source for global news and information covering the ecosystem of high productivity computing.